Welcome to the Comic Book Rundown.
Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Rundown. I'm your host, Joe, and with me today, brand new to the podcast, is Dalton.
Hello, I'm Dalton.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing pretty good. This is your first time on the show, isn't it? I know you've listened to it a few times.
Yeah, I've listened to some episodes, and I've been trying to get on here for a while.
Yeah, just it's you know, been busy. I know I've got a lot people set up to record, and it finally clicked where you can come on.
Yeah, I couldn't come on the last time you want me to.
Life's
busy, you know.
Well, I definitely really wanted you on for the MCU stuff. I know you really wanted to too.
So,
first time on. So, if you know, what we like to do with the first timers is ask them what their comic book history is. Would you please regale us with your story?
I really do not have a lot of experience in this realm. I've always wanted to get into it a little bit, but I've just never really had the opportunity to.
Well, that's fair. I think you may have an opportunity now as you look at my shelf.
Now I see someone with a very vast collection.
Yes. All you have to do is ask.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'll have to...
Or, you know, libraries.
Well, you know. Who wants to go to a library?
I go to the library all the time, dude. I mean, sure, I've got a bunch, obviously, but
my library.
Yeah, that works too. I'll accept that. Okay, so today you are joining me for a new story arc that we're doing. It's called The Sixth Gun.
Mm-hmm.
This is a series that has been on my radar for some time. I found out about it maybe about, I don't know, 5 years ago. And maybe even longer than that. And I've read about half of the series. And I really enjoyed the series. And I've been wanting to do it on the show for a while. And I just didn't have the right people and just wasn't the right time. And, and now we got the right time. So
And the right person.
So you'll be on every time we do Sixth Gun. I'm going to have you on for the rest of them. All just right, so you know. I think I'm going to start doing that from now on. Is keeping people with the same story arcs and storytelling. Because I've... have it in the past and people got confused.
It keeps people familiar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially if you remember what happened before and then you can question it when it comes up later.
Right.
So, go ahead into my spiel here. Like I said, we're doing The Sixth Gun, issues 1-6. They were published by Oni Press in 2010. The writer is Colin Bunn. The artist is Brian Hurt. Letters were also done by Brian Hurt. And colors were done by Brian Hurt and Bill Crabtree. So as we start out this series, we are in this small town. I believe the town is called Brimstone. Could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really remember. At the Silver Palace? I think that's what it is. That's not right.
No.
I don't remember. It's a bar. It's this the Old West time. It's just after Civil War.
No, it's the Silver Palace.
This is the palace?
Yeah, it is Silver Palace.
Yeah, so it's just after the Civil War. Mm-hmm. So that gives you the time frame that we're in. And we are talking to these Pinkertons. They were hired by this lady called Widow Hume. To look for these mystical objects. They came across a few different ones in their travels, and any one that was actually fake, they just, you know, just kind of whatever, took their time with it and wandered off. But the stuff that had true power, that's the stuff that they obviously took seriously and took care of anybody that... They basically didn't leave behind witnesses.
Right.
So we are then introduced we're introduced to Widow Hume, and she basically just says that isn't that kind of a funny thing? People are valuable, but objects like the lantern that the Pinkertons, the police force, went after, and the cards, as well as this gun that she, as she's saying that she is touching this gun that has a very distinct
marking.
Yes, on the hilt.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that this is very that there's some mystical properties to this gun that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
She's then handed a letter from one of the Pinkertons, and she reads over it and says, "Okay, well, I think I need your guys' services a little more." We pan forward to the next page, and we are introduced to one Drake Sinclair. He looks like a lawman for the most part. But he also has a touch of mysticism about him. He comes up to this tree, and right at midnight, the tree starts to glow, and we see a bunch of hanging men in there. And it turns out this tree, I think it's, was it called the Whispering Tree? I'm pretty sure we find out later, but
The Gallows Tree.
Gallows Tree, thank you. And basically these are kind of like oracle beings that the oracles, but in the same time they're just all knowing, because they even say, like, Sinclair is starting to say, like, "Hey, I'm here for," and the one ghost is like, we know who you are, Mr. Drake, or Drake Sinclair, and we know what you're here for. And so it just kind of again, all the mystic properties. He gets asked by one of them that, you know, "We will help you out, but you have to do something for us." There were maps that led to this tree and led to all these people hanging. And apparently there's only one map left, and that's the one that Drake has.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "You know what? If you tell me what I need to know, I'll burn this map right here and now and then be done with it." So they tell him and basically say he's got to go look for, because he's looking for General Hume, the Widow Hume's husband, who is quote-unquote dead, looking for his treasure. The tree basically saying that you need to find the general's fortune. You need to unlock the vault. But that's going to be the most challenging thing of all. You need to find the family Moncrief. Thank you. Moncrief. I can say words, I swear. Once you find them, that will help you out. You seek them out at Crescent Junction. And Sinclair's like, "All right, cool. I guess I'll be on my way." And the one ghost's like, "But you promised the map. Burn it. You promised." And Drake's just like, I know what I said. And if this map could, you know, give me some good coin if I need to. So we kind of already see how much of a shady man Drake is.
Right.
So, okay, so, you know, next day or day after, a couple days, who knows, we are on this farmland, and we are introduced to Becky Montcliffe. And she is coming in, you know, she's doing her farmhand details. And she comes to her paw, who is, you know, dying in the bed. He's sick. He's had a long life. He does not look well. Yeah, correct. He's coughing like crazy, but he does ask her to come into the room, and he's got something to tell her. We also see that the Pinkertons are there along with a bunch of locals, looks like, and they are, like, kind of casing the house. They're kind of watching over it.
Mm-hmm.
And the one head Pinkerton guy, he's like, "Okay, well, I mean, it's just the two of them, so you boys go do your thing, and this should be easy peasy, right?"
How tough could it be?
Exactly. So we go back to Paul and Becky, and he's trying to tell her that, you know, I've lived a good life. You and your mom have been good to me. Once I die, I want you to take this case that I have, and I want you to just throw it in the deepest river you can. Like, just get rid of it. I don't need it anymore. I won't need it anymore. You don't need to have it. And she's trying to be all like, no, you're fine, you'll live. It's the whole condolencing thing, she, you know, mm-hmm. like they do. Like any, you know, family member would do. But as he is talking to her, he kind of looks past her and starts to, I don't want to say go crazy, but he starts to, what's the word?
He starts to unload some rounds
from his gun. Yeah, well, he grabs, he opens up the case, and in it sits a gun. He grabs the gun and starts shooting. Like, Becky doesn't see anything out there. She doesn't hear anything. But Paul is intent that there's somebody out there. Mm-hmm. So much so that when he shoots, he kills one of the locals that was behind the door. One of the other guys is just like, one of the locals is just like, I'll be damned, I'm not going in there. Like, mm-hmm. the other Pinkerton guy is yelling at him to get in there. And the local's like, you want to do it? You do it yourself. So the Pinkerton gets down to go in and then gets his head shot through. And the local's like, oh, fuck, I'm getting out of here. And as he goes running, he gets shot. So Becky is kind of freaking out while Paul is just starting to, I guess, see clearly what's going on. I mean, he's dying. He's not doing so well. But he is able to understand that there are four more guys out there. And all he has to do is clear them enough so that Becky can get out. And he even says so. He's like, as soon as I start shooting again, you sneak out the back and don't worry about me. You just gotta go. Then he starts coughing again. We then get a couple panels where it's red, like a red hue to it. And it's almost like we're seeing the future. Like, he sees the guy walking up, and then the guy breaks down the door, and then we see the Pinkerton guy shoot Paul, but we're back to Paul looking at the gun, getting ready to shoot him, and then he gets shot in the head. So we got to see his glimpses of the future. Becky is devastated, of course, because her dad is dead. And as the Pinkerton walks in, we've got two other locals walking in. She jumps on the gun, her Paul's gun, and blasts one of them, or I guess blasts at them. I don't think he actually hits one of them. I could be wrong. But as soon as she fires, she then sees a vision of the future. And then she passes out. Or maybe she did hit the one guy, because I don't see the two of them now. Yeah, I think she did actually kill the one guy. The last local is kind of just spouting off, and as he's reaching for the gun, the Pinkerton says, don't touch it. But of course he touches it, and we see as soon as he does touch it that his hand starts to burn. It's not just regular fire, it's like a green hue to it. What do you think about that part?
I feel like whenever you see like a green hue on like some object, you just know it's kind of, it's a little more mysterious. Mm-hmm. Whenever you see a green hue to something, you know it has some properties that are maybe beyond this world a little bit. Yeah. So.
And then it gets explained here by the Pinkerton. He says that the gun's bound to the girl now, so and no one else can touch it. And that's super interesting to me. Like that right there. After once I started reading this years ago, that got my attention, and that kind of hooked me. Like, this is, I love mystical stuff. I love some old West things I do like. Like, I know Back to the Future 3 was my favorite out of the whole trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Or should I say Quadra? I know they're making a new one. So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're going to be making a new one soon. As far as I know, everybody signed on. But so the local grabs the girl. Pinkerton grabs the gun with, you know, he's holding a knife, holding it out in front of him so he doesn't touch it. One of the other Pinkertons that was just shot, he's still alive, but he's dying. So he's not going to, we can tell he's not going to make it.
Yeah, they're just kind of leaving him, leaving him there.
So night comes and Sinclair comes rolling up to the farm. And notices, you know, he walks past the Pinkerton who's still dying, but there's also a bunch of vultures and buzzards flying around. So you know he's close to death. Drake goes in, sees that the farmer, Paul, is dead, sees that the gun is missing, and he goes out to the Pinkerton and kind of starts interrogating him as he's, you know, laying there dying. And the Pinkerton kind of gives up the ghost, saying, you know, we were here to take out this farmer and his stepdaughter. Well, take them to their employer. But the old coot had more fight in them than they all expected. Obviously, with the, let's see here, what, 8 bodies laying around?
Mm-hmm.
5 bodies, whatever, however many. And then he says that Drake asked who his employer was, and he says that some woman owns a saloon and cat house called the Silver Palace. So you were right, in the town of Brimstone. And he said that's where they took the girl. And he asks Sinclair if he can help, you know, basically save him, get him to a Sawbones, which, do you know what Sawbones is?
I don't.
Sawbones was the doctor back in the day. They, instead of just calling him doctor, they were the medical experts. Let's put it that way. If they had to saw off your arm to save you, they would saw off your arm to save you.
Yeah, I'm guessing they have that name for a reason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I wasn't totally sure, but I kind of had the idea.
Okay. But. So Sinclair just leaves Pinkerton there to basically die by the buzzards. My question is, he sat there the whole time, and these vultures and buzzards didn't touch him. The minute Sinclair walks away, you see in the background there, they're starting to attack. Like, I get the guy was dying. Was he dead? No. Mm-hmm. Why did they attack earlier? Who knows?
Yeah, it says earlier that the vultures they're kind of all-knowing in a sense.
They were saying how they whisper the knowledge, the questions you always want to know, but then you're dying, and then that's the only time they speak to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you really can't do anything with that knowledge.
Right. So I think that they knew that Sinclair was going to come, but they weren't exactly sure what he was going to do with him. So
okay.
Once he left,
like, all right,
the writing was on the wall. Sure.
Take him. I'm going to assume later that night, but this is a different part of the country. We are at this monk's refuge. I can't remember what they're called. Church? Monster. There we go. I knew the words would get there eventually. And they're not really monks. They're more just other preachers and just, yeah, those guys that time. Those things. But they're being attacked by some individuals. Well, these aren't just your normal preachers either, because they're like, you know, they're throwing guns in the background. They've got this giant machine gun. What's the actual term?
Railgun?
There we go. Thank you. Let's start with the R. Giant railgun that they're setting up. Like, these, I mean, the holy men, sure, but man, that's a hell of a church.
Yeah, they're prepared for something.
Yes, they are. And so as they are set to basically retaliate, their doors get blasted off and they just start firing away. The older guy, Father Arturo, who is kind of the head of the place. He's like, you know, is it terrible that I hope today would be a younger man's problem? It's like, no, that's actually a fair concern. Like, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
But as they are retaliating, Arturo gets hit by a bullet, and the one younger pastor is concerned, but Father Arturo is like, it's fine, it's just a flesh wound. But before he can actually finish saying that, he starts getting boils all over the place, all over his body, and his body just disintegrates to nothing. Almost like a plague, per se. Very, very cool. And then we see these four individuals, these four unique individuals. We've got this one guy who looks very skeleton-like. He's got like a wisp of hair. You can see his rib cage and everything. We've got another guy with a hangman's hood over top of him, and he's all bandaged up. This middle individual looks very ghoulish with his top hat and suit. Very like a mortician of that time. And then the last guy looks like a big, burly cowboy, but, you know, square jaw and beefy, very John Wayne-ish.
He looks very normal compared to the others.
Correct. But I know when you actually get a closer look to him, he's got a ton of scars. He's seen some things.
Yes.
And the ghoulish guy. No, not the ghoulish guy. Yeah, the ghoulish guy. Sorry. Questioning myself here. The ghoulish guy is talking to the last remaining brother, priest, whatever you want to call him. And he's like, look, you know what we came for. So either you could tell us where he's at, and you can mourn you dead, and we'll leave. Or you don't tell us where he is, and we just tear the place down looking for him.
We all know how this scenario goes.
Oh, yeah, because he tells him that he's in the well down there, and the ghoul's like, you did a good thing. Too bad I can't return the favor, and shoots him. It's like, damn, son. But it's another interesting thing, because after he shoots him, we see this ghoulish thing in the background, like the wisp of it going into the gun. So, which is, I mean, it's going to play in later on, but that's another mystical thing that I find cool. So what we have is the skeletal guy diving into the well. We've got the actual cowboy looking guy holding a rope as he's, you know, down there. And then the cowboy starts pulling up a casket out of the well. And once they open it, we are introduced to General Hume, who is still alive, chained up in this casket. He looks very gothically ghoulish as well. But he is pissed. He wants his gun back. And that's how we end this first issue. Thank you for listening to the Comic Book Rundown. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can do so on Twitter at Comic Rundown, on Instagram at Comic Book Rundown, or you can send your emails to comicbookrundown@gmail.com. We'll be back very soon with more to this Six Gun story.